Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I am Lauren Tenney, and this is the Talk with Tenney show. Thanks for tuning in. I want to give the number if you'd like to call in. It's area code 267-521-0167. Area code 267-521-0167. If you need a toll-free line for a limited amount of time, we have a toll-free number. It's area code 855-346-3351. 855-346-3351. So I want to thank you all for listening. I went and did a little bit of tracking down of who was calling from where last night, just from my memory, because I realized it's going to be a month that the show is on. And people are calling in from all over the place, all the way up to Alaska, British Columbia, Ottawa, Toronto, and then in the States, Alaska, all over the States. And it's been really fascinating. And so first-time callers are welcome. If you have something you'd like to talk about, area code 267-521-0167. So I got a call today about the show last night and was given some really interesting information that I want to pass on. One of the things is for people to call their attention to a Connecticut court case that we all know about, often talk about the Eli Lilly Zyprexa case, of where there was a RICO case that the state of Connecticut similarly brings this action pursuant to the Federal Racketeering Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act. And so this is something that has been ongoing. People keep on trying to bring attention to it, and we must continue to talk about these things. And then also this other thing in California, I think this is, it's called the Proxy Parent Foundation, and it's a DBA, a Doing Business As of Planned Lifetime Assistance Network of California. And apparently they develop these trusts where people's parents, they become the proxy for people, and then people's parents donate their estates to them or something. And so I'm just learning about this, and I find it just on its face kind of troubling. There is somebody there are a couple of people on the line. Because I've been having problems, I'm just going to open up your lines. Area code 609, if you'd like to join in the conversation, your line is open.
Am I on?
Yes, you're on live. Hi.
Okay. I didn't press one, but okay. I was going to listen. I just, you know, last night, yesterday, we were talking about the early days of the movement.
Yes.
And, which is something that's interesting to me, and I like to read about. And but I came across someone a poem, and I thought maybe you could read it. I have it printed out. I could read it or you could read it. It's called "To Be a Mental Patient" by Ray Unziger.
Ray Unziger, yeah. Would you read it?
I can read it. Yeah. Okay.
Ray Unziger.
To be a mental patient. To be a mental patient is to be stigmatized, ostracized, socialized, patronized, psychiatrized. To be a mental patient is to have everyone controlling your life but you. You're watched by your shrink, your social worker, your friends, your family, and then you're diagnosed as paranoid. To be a mental patient is to live with the constant threat and possibility of being locked up at any time for almost any reason. To be a mental patient is to live on $82 a month in food stamps, which won't let you buy Kleenex to dry your tears, and to watch your shrink to his office from lunch driving a Mercedes-Benz. To be a mental patient is to take drugs to dull your mind, deaden your senses, make you jitter and drool, then you take more drugs to lessen the side effects. To be a mental patient is to apply for jobs and lie about the last few months or years because you've been in the hospital, and then you don't get the job anyway because you're a mental patient. To be a mental patient is not to matter. To be a mental patient is never to be taken seriously. To be a mental patient is to be a resident of a ghetto surrounded by other mental patients who are scared and hungry and bored and broke as you are. To be a mental patient is to watch TV and see how violent and dangerous and dumb and incompetent and crazy you are. To be a mental patient is to be a statistic. To be a mental patient is to wear a label, and that label never goes away, a label that says little about what you are and even less about who you are. To be a mental patient is to never say what you mean, but to sound like you mean what you say. To be a mental patient is to tell your psychiatrist he's helping you, even if he is not. To be a mental patient is to act glad when you're sad and calm when you're mad, and to always be appropriate. To be a mental patient is to participate in super groups that call themselves therapy. Music isn't music, it's therapy. Volleyball isn't sport, it's therapy. Sewing is therapy. Washing dishes is therapy. Even the air you breathe is therapy, and that's called the milieu. To be a mental patient is not to die, even if you want to, and not to cry, and not to hurt, and not be scared, and not be angry, and not be vulnerable, and not to laugh too loud, because if you do, you only prove that you are a mental patient, even if you are not. And so you become a nothing in a no world, and you are not. And that's by Ray Unzicker, copyrighted 1984. I think it's a good poem. I don't know too much about this person. I should have read up on it, but I know she was one of the early people in the movement and did some stuff with women's liberation, I think.
Yes. Ray, I didn't know well at all myself. I had met her once. I consider myself lucky to have met her. Her work certainly has influenced me over the years. And she definitely was what the National Association for Rights Protection and Advocacy calls a civil rights pioneer. And I'm just looking at the narpa.org/Ray.Unzicker, UNZICKER.HTM. And it says that Ray Unzicker, 52, what a fucking loss, 52, mm-hmm. died on March 22nd at her home in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Ray was one of the world's leading advocates for the civil rights of people with psychiatric disabilities. She was an adamant pioneer of the self-evident truth that people with psychiatric disabilities have the same rights as other people to exercise free choice and how and where they will live their lives and where they will receive treatment, if any. That they must not be involuntarily imprisoned in institutions, nursing homes, groups, back rooms, or any other places. That they must not be subjected to forced drugging or forced treatment of any kind. Over the years, Ray advocated in 43 states and several foreign countries. She authored numerous articles and appeared on primetime national television many times. In 1995, President Clinton appointed her to the National Council on Disabilities. It is my impression that she was the first certain, I'm reading this, it is my impression that she was the first, certainly one of the first, outspoken advocates for the civil rights of people with psychiatric disabilities ever to receive a major presidential appointment. Ray's crowning achievement was her promoting the editing of the National Council's landmark manifesto, From Privileges to Rights, People Labeled with Psychiatric Disabilities Speaking for Themselves. And if I'm interjecting here. If people haven't read this, go get this. From Privileges to Rights, People Labeled with Psychiatric Disabilities Speaking for Themselves. You can find it for free online. It's a government document, the National Council on Disability. So the NARPA continues, this was perhaps the first formal statement by any nation supporting the rights of people with psychiatric disabilities to exercise free choice in all their aspects of their lives. Ray was a brilliant person and a passionate, articulate supporter of her principles. She was full of love for all with whom she came in contact. I was profoundly moved by her epic courage. The monumental accomplishment of her last several years made in the face of continuous, excruciating pain from terminal cancer. Ray Unzicker was a true soldier of justice, a great American patriot, a pioneer patriot. Let us unite to honor Ray Unzicker by redirecting ourselves to the kind, passionate, courageous advocacy for justice for all that she exemplified. We miss you. We love you. Lead on. Justin and Yoshiko Dart. That's who wrote that, Justin and Yoshiko. Justin Dart. And that's another loss.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, yeah, Jason, thanks for calling in with us, because I think that it's really important that people remember our history in this way and hear it, you know, as profoundly as it is. And last night, George Ebert was talking about the principle of declaration, the Declaration of Principles, and from 1982. And I was planning on actually going through a little of that tonight, and so we're on the we're on the same wavelength. So that's that's fabulous. And so this particular copy of it, I'm looking at it, can be found in Phoenix Rising, November 1982, and that, of course, is something that Don Weitz, who's been on, has been instrumental in, and it was on page 40. And so the Declaration of Principles, this started the 10th Annual International Conference on Human Rights and Psychiatric Oppression, held in Toronto, Canada, on May 14th to the 18th, 1982, adopted the following principles. One, we oppose involuntary psychiatric intervention, including civil commitments and the administration of psychiatric procedures, quote, treatments, or by force or coercion or without informed consent. Two, we oppose involuntary psychiatric intervention because it is unethical and unconstitutional, denial of freedom, due process, and the right to be let alone. And three, we oppose involuntary psychiatric intervention because it is a violation of the individual's right to control his or her own soul, mind, and body. And those were the first three of just basic reasons as to why, or overarching reasons as to why, the Declaration had those up first, and then there's, you know, they're sectioned off. And then number four, and, you know, when we do this every year with the Alliance, we all have a copy of it, and each person who wants to read the next one reads it, and then we all read the last principle together, the last several principles together. And it's a really great experience to reaffirm these principles, and to, there are many people who probably don't even really know what they are or where they came from. And so number four was, we oppose forced psychiatric procedures such as drugging, electroshock, psychosurgery, restraints, solitary confinement, and, quote, aversive behavior modification. Five, we oppose psychiatric procedures because they humiliate, debilitate, injure, incapacitate, and kill people. Six, we oppose forced psychiatric procedures because they are at best quackery and at worst tortures, which can and do cause severe and permanent harm to the total being of people being subjected to them. And then there's another break. And then it says seven, we oppose the psychiatric system because it is inherently tyrannical. Eight, we oppose the psychiatric system because it is an extra-legal parallel police force which suppresses cultural and political dissent. Nine, we oppose the psychiatric system because it punishes individuals who have had or claim to have had spiritual experiences and invalidates those experiences by defining them as, quote, symptoms of, quote, mental illness. Ten, we oppose the psychiatric, if you want to jump in at any point, just let me know.
Okay.
10, we oppose the psychiatric system because it uses the trappings of medicine and science to mask the social control function it serves. 11, we oppose the psychiatric system because it invalidates the real needs of poor people by offering social welfare under the guise of psychiatric, quote, care and treatment. 12, we oppose the psychiatric system because it feeds on the poor and powerless, the elderly, women, children, sexual minorities, people of color, and ethnic groups. 13, we oppose the psychiatric system because it creates a stigmatized class of society which is easily oppressed and controlled. 14, we oppose the psychiatric system because its growing influence in education, the prisons, the military, government, industry, and medicine threatens to turn society into a psychiatric state made up of two classes, those who impose, quote, treatment, and those who are or are likely to have it imposed on them.
The therapeutic state.
Yep. 15, we oppose the psychiatric system because it is frighteningly similar to the Inquisition, chattel slavery, and the Nazi concentration camps. Section 3. 16, we oppose the medical model of mental illness because it justifies involuntary psychiatric intervention, including forced drugging. We oppose the medical model of mental illness because it dupes the public into seeking or accepting voluntary treatment by fostering the notion that fundamental human problems, whether personal or social, can be solved by psychiatric means. And then there's a section break. 18. We oppose the use of psychiatric terms because they substitute jargon for plain English and are fundamentally stigmatizing, demeaning, unscientific, mystifying, and superstitious. Examples. Plain English, psychiatric inmate. Psychiatric jargon, mental patient. Plain English, psychiatric institution. Psychiatric jargon, mental hospital, mental health center. Psychiatric system, mental health system. Psychiatric procedure, treatment, therapy. Personal or social difficulties in living, mental illness. Socially undesirable characteristic or trait, symptom. Drugs, medication, drugging, chemotherapy, electroshock, electroconvulsive therapy, anger, hostility, enthusiasm, mania, joy, euphoria, fear, paranoia, sadness, unhappiness, depression, vision, spiritual experience, hallucination, nonconformity, schizophrenia, unpopular belief, delusion. And then there's another section break. 19. We believe that people should have the right to live in any manner or lifestyle they choose. 20. We believe that suicidal thoughts and or attempts should not be dealt with as psychiatric or legal issues. 21. We believe that alleged dangerousness, whether to oneself or others, should not be considered grounds for denying personal liberty, and that only proven criminal acts should be the basis for such denial. 22. We believe that persons charged with crime should be tried for their alleged criminal acts with due process of law, and that psychiatric professionals should not be given expert witness status in criminal proceedings or courts of law. Mm-hmm. 23. We believe that there should be no involuntary psychiatric interventions in prisons and that the prison system should be reformed and humanized. 24. We believe that so long as one individual's freedom is unjustly restricted, no one is truly free. 25. We believe that the psychiatric system is, in fact, a pacification program controlled by psychiatrists and supported by other mental health professionals whose chief function is to persuade, threaten, or force people into conforming to established norms and values. 26. We believe that the psychiatric system cannot be reformed but must be abolished. 27. We believe that voluntary networks of community alternatives to the public system should be widely encouraged and supported. Alternatives such as self-help or mutual support groups, advocacy right groups, co-op houses, crisis centers, and drop-ins should be controlled by the users themselves to serve their needs while ensuring their freedom, dignity, and self-respect. And then there's another section break, and this is the part we usually all read together at the Bastille Day. 28. We demand an end to involuntary psychiatric intervention. We demand individual liberty and social justice for everyone. We intend to make these words real and will not rest until we do. Wow. And so that's the Declaration of Principles from 1982 that George brought up the other night and that we reaffirm every year at Bastille Day. Which will be July 13th to the 16th in Albany, New York, if anybody's around and wants to come, on the sidewalk in front of the New York State Office of Mental Health. But I think these are the problems haven't gone away. And Jason, what you read from Ray Unziker, that was 1984.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's 2004, so it's 30 years later, right? No, it's 2014. And so that would be, 30 years later, and nothing has changed.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing has changed. There
got
are
worse,
a couple.
I think.
It's
gotten worse.
In many ways, the way it's just everywhere now. It used to just be isolated, but now
I know.
Can't.
I agree. I remember, when I was first diagnosed, I was in 1989 as manic depressive, you know, the term bipolar wasn't even commonly used. I don't know when that's, I started
to hear
about.
It was an earlier DSM, right?
I guess it was one of the versions, maybe 3 or 4. And I know that some of those got modified. I just remember here, I don't have much memory, but
such a crime.
Well, it's gotten worse, more insidious, and
I hear you struggling and trying to put it together.
Sometimes I just go blank. I often just go blank. Sometimes I just stare. I don't know what to do or I'm not even thinking. But, I'm trying to, go ahead.
I think as you put it back together, I want to hear what you're saying, because it is worse today than it was before. And young people are just being targeted in schools. It's entirely commonplace. This special that Amy from Colorado posted up on my Facebook wall today about Colorado quote unquote untreated, I think it was called. And just horrifying, and they're going right into the schools, and it's just, it's so much worse, and people don't have access to it, and everything is just done with no consideration for the damage that it's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that part of why you're struggling is because that you were damaged by these
mm-hmm.
procedures that you were forced to, comply with. And
mm-hmm.
I think, for people who may be thinking about going down this road, to be aware that there's like lifelong consequences.
Yeah, and it seems like there are more and more people doing this voluntarily, seeking it out. I think you guys mentioned that. We've talked about that. I mean, when I was given a label, no one was familiar with this stuff, and it's commonplace now, and my friends, it wasn't talked about, you didn't hear about it really in the news, in the media like you do now, unless you're really worth paying attention, I guess, go ahead.
No, I think it's just so important for people to know and that we need to expose them, because it is, it's like a cancer, and I've seen other people write like this, that psychiatry is like a cancer, and it's just growing at phenomenal rates, and the way that it's posed in the media is just so troublesome, because people in their framework aren't able to develop a rational opinion about it, because they're given propaganda and fraud, and so
mm-hmm.
they believe that
mm-hmm.
even harder than reality, because it's being designed to convince them. I mean, don't forget, these are psychiatrists and psychologists who are developing the measures, people who
mm-hmm.
have spent their entire educational careers learning how to control and manipulate people. That's
mm-hmm.
what they do. That's what psychiatrists
mm-hmm.
and psychologists do. And so, when you come up against somebody who's never heard anything but this, they hold on to it so dearly because they've been brainwashed into believing it. And so it's almost like,
mm-hmm.
The MK Ultra. sorry, I can't even say it without choking. It's almost like MK Ultra.
It's so much so that when I present people with, these other ideas of what's really going on. There's very little acknowledgement. There's no outrage. There's no reaction. So when you use words like torture and slavery, and this is not an exaggeration at
no.
all, and I have no problem with you using terms like that, because the public people have been so brainwashed that
they believe it.
They believe it.
They believe it.
It's hard to even convince them. If they will listen, otherwise they'll come. Usually I get, people replies like, well, they're going to figure it out soon, or we've got new technologies and soon they'll know what causes these mental illnesses and everything's going to be okay.
Right.
And they just
and
keep,
until then, we'll just pretend like we know and act like we
right.
know. When anybody
right.
says you don't
right.
know,
right.
we'll discredit them and lock them up if they speak too loudly. And
mm-hmm.
and so it's a total scam. So this whole RICO thing, this racketeering and corrupt organization stuff is real. And I'm so glad that they called it out. And I also started looking at some stuff around preventive detention, since you brought that up the other night, and there are a couple of
mm-hmm.
interesting articles, one that just came out of, I think, Colombia, in terms of terrorists. And so I haven't read it enough
mm-hmm.
to be able to really talk about it, but I'm looking into it, because I think that the idea that they can carve out people who have psychiatric histories and create special laws for them and hold them in ways that they
mm-hmm.
can't hold other people is exactly preventive detention, and that's illegal for everybody except us, and now
mm-hmm.
maybe terrorists. And so,
right.
I haven't read the article well enough to say what the position is, but there's definitely
yeah.
It's being used in terms of terrorists, and so and then this new law in New York State that I'm just starting to find out about. That, there's 4 days left to session. It's going to be really frightening for people if it passes, where if you have if you're psychiatrically involved in prison or in jail, this new law makes it so that you have to have a mental health treatment, quote-unquote treatment plan. I can't even say anything without quoting every 2 seconds. Before you're allowed out of your incarceration. And so it's different. I thought it was an expansion of Kendra's law. It's different in terms of Kendra's law, because the probation officer can already file an involuntary outpatient commitment charge petition against somebody that they have oversight of and control of, but they can't go right to the institution. So this law would make it so that a parole officer would be able to say this person needs to be institutionalized, and then they're picked up and they go to the institution. And last I checked, parole officers weren't like psychologists or psychiatrists or anything. Like, I mean, not that
mm-hmm.
there's any validity there, right? But
right.
there's no...
Just locking people up. I mean, just whenever the need arises without a trial, without anything. I mean... The whole idea, we should talk about also the insanity thing.
It's a complicated issue. The insanity of it. I know a lot of people, and my own perspective is, if that wasn't allowable, so much of the discrimination we face wouldn't exist, because
mm-hmm.
people just claim it because they think they're going to get an easier way out, or like with mental
right.
health courts, but now... What the new proposed Kendra's law does, and then this other bill that's put forward, is it extends it to people who are incarcerated. And so all of this work, and I keep on saying I'm as guilty as this is the next person, of where we like yell and scream, but we're not, criminal. There's nothing criminal going on here. They've just expanded the group to include people who are incarcerated. And so I feel like we really need to be, and myself included, I'm like scolding myself here, that we we really need to just keep it on the issue that this is a human rights violation regardless of anything, and that it's that, you know, that they have no science, they have no way of predicting these things.
Right.
The idea that, you know, that when these people are right in front of them, they don't know it. The former, this, you know, the Jared and Amanda Miller in Las Vegas, you know, who were, you know, now they're going after the conspiracy theorists. And, you know, anybody who has any kind of sovereign positioning in the way they think about things. And so, you know, it's like, well, welcome to our world. You know, here, this is, you know, one person, two people do something, and now an entire population of people have a net cast over them. And now it's, you know, more evidence as to why we have to control you and that, you know, this is, you know, going to be a problem. And for as many and horrifying, you know, like my whole position is a nonviolent revolution, and I believe in that, and I believe that when we act within our First Amendment rights that we can accomplish things and get attention called and all this kind of stuff. But the way that they are positioning it just makes it so difficult for people to now even, you know, question the government if you're going to be thought that you're going to be a dangerous person because you're questioning the government, United States, right? Like, or the corporation thereof, you know. So it gets really complicated and hard. And I think talking about these kinds of things is really important. And if anybody's got wants to jump in on the call, area code 917, I'm opening your line if you want to talk, because we've been having some issues with the flagging for people. So 917, your line's open if you'd like to talk. And if anybody wants to call in, the number is area code 267-521-0167. And we have a limited time 800 toll-free number, and that's area code 855-346-3351 if you live in the States. Area code 855-346-3351. 917, are you there? Okay, I'm going to guess you just want to listen, so I'm going to put you back on hold. But if for the people who are online holding, if you want to get in the conversation, just press 1, and that should notify me about it. I also want to let people know that a new show has been set up on June 26th with Dr. Bonnie Burstow. It's going to be a conversation that we're going to have. And I'm really excited about this. It's going to be from 8 to 10 on Thursday, June 26th. And so we will have a lively conversation, shining light on psychiatry and efforts to resist against it in Canada and across the world. Dr. Bonnie Burstow's work over the years on exposing the abuse and torture of people, particularly women, have endured at the hands of psychiatry is expansive and dates back decades. Her work on exposing electroshock as a crime against humanity needs attention. You can call into the show to discuss things, including some of Dr. Burstow's interests, including the fight against psychiatry, the battle in academia being silenced and obstructed, and strategic activism. Different efforts Dr. Burstow has been involved in, including Psychiatry Disrupted, Psychiatry Interrogated, and Psychiatry, the Business of Madness, will be at hand. And from her bio, it says, Dr. Bonnie Burstow is a faculty member at Ontario Institute for Studies and Education at University of Toronto, and a very long-time anti-psychiatry activist, approximately 35 years. She is also a feminist therapist, a prison abolitionist, a left-wing anarchist, and a prolific author. Examples of organizations and events which she has chaired over the years include the Ontario Coalition Against Electroshock, Resistance Against Psychiatry, Coalition Against Psychiatric Assault, and the First Psych Out Conference. Examples of her publications are Radical Feminist Therapy, Working in the Context of Violence, Shrink Resistant, co-edited with Don Weitz, who has been a guest on this show on the Electroshock special on Crime Against Humanity, and A Rose by Any Other Name, naming in the battle against psychiatry and Mad Matters. She also is the author of the much-anticipated and soon-to-be-released anthology, of which she is editor, Psychiatry Disrupted, and that's published by the McGill Queens University Press. And so she's really a quite impressive woman and activist
mm-hmm.
who has done a ton of work over the years, and I'm real excited. So that'll be June 26th from 8 to 10 p.m., a Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. And there's a Facebook page for that also. And then I wanted to just remind people about the Mind Freedom Conference, which plans on being really an amazing event. The keynotes include Robert Whitaker, who wrote Anatomy of an Epidemic and Mad in America, and has just done a phenomenal amount of work in helping people have their voices heard and validated. And Mary Ellen Copeland of the Wellness Recovery Action Plans and RAP, and she has a lot of different materials for people, especially veterans, that she's got some really good materials for, as does Paula Kaplan. But at the Mind Freedom Conference, the tracks are going to be examples of soteria houses. So there's going to be people representing soteria houses, peer-run respite programs, the Sunrise Center withdrawing from psychiatric drugs, and Hearing Voices Networks groups. And that's going to be July 24th to the 27th in Connecticut. And I'll be broadcasting live from there, so that should be an interesting show. We'll see.
Wow.
Yeah. And so that should be fun. And then the Alliance's Bastille Day is July 13th to the 16th. And for anybody who is around Utica, New York, or who wants to take a trip in, from July 11th and 12th, we're going to be having a gathering at the Alliance in Utica to discuss organizing and potential direct action strategies. And then head over on July 13th to the vigil. So if you'd like to find out more information about that, you can call the Alliance at area code 800-654-7227. So there's a lot going on, and, you know, when you think back to the work that Ray put out and everything that she talked about in terms of, you know, to be a mental patient, and then you look at, like, the Declaration of Principles that was developed there, and then you look at, like, what is being supported at the Alternatives Conference, where, you know, like, the call for papers, and this isn't personal, this is not about any individual on any level whatsoever, this is about structure. When you look at what the call for papers for the Alternatives Conference, one point in time was the International Conference on Psychiatric Oppression and Human Rights, they are the general areas for submission for workshops are peer-led programs, leadership development, integration of physical health and behavioral health care, technology, yeah, alternative therapies, and diversity and inclusion, which is important. I will be the first to admit that. But the rest of it is such a problem. And when you think to the difference between the Declaration of Principles, you know, there's not a word about opposition to, or so we need to do it on our own, because this idea of the government being supportive of the truth is just clearly not within its reach at this point in time. And that's very, very sad. So if you'd like to call in, the number is area code 267-521-0167. area code 267-521-0167. I'm going back to that Proxy Parent Foundation. I was informed about today. And so it says, the Proxy Parent Foundation safeguards public benefits for disabled persons through the Plan of California Master Pooled Trust and provides, quote, family-like personal support services for people with mental illness and other brain disorders. They go on to say our expertise, and if you want to look at this yourself, I'm not making it up, it's proxyparentfoundation.org, our expertise. Proxy Parent Foundation is a perfect example of marrying the expertise of the business world and the altruism of the nonprofit world. Proxy... It almost sounds like a satire, right? Proxy Parent Foundation provides...
I'm thinking of this other way. There's a website called Bonkers Institute.
Yes.
That's what it's reminding me of.
Exactly. Yeah. It should get submitted out there. This is not satirical. I'm not making a joke here. This is serious. This is real. I mean, it exists. So it says, the Proxy Parent Foundation provides services more efficiently and cost-effectively than can be provided independently, while assuring that disabled people can thrive in society and experience a real quality of life. People first language, folks. And so then they say, our services. Trustee. Proxy Parent Foundation is the trustee of the Plan of California Master Pooled Trust. It can accommodate either first-party self-settled or third-party family-generated special needs trusts. The Proxy Parent Foundation Plan of California Master Pooled Trust has no asset minimum and is open to all ages and disability types. And then it says personal support services. Just like a loving family, Proxy Parent Foundation helps coordinate public and private social services and medical care for Plan of California Special Needs Trust beneficiaries with mental illness and other brain disorders. Proxy Parent Foundation helps answer their family's questions, who will care when I'm not there. Our personal support services for people with mental illness and other brain disorders may include help in finding suitable housing, providing medication education, life skills tutoring, and social activities and friendship. Proxy Parent Foundation, DBA of Planned Lifetime Assistance Network of California. It's and then so people can, like, donate their or set up a thing of where their estate is put in the hands of this Proxy Parent Foundation.
Is that right? Yeah, the foundation. And then they, what, choose a family for someone? Is that it?
Or something, but it just seems like this is the idea of, you know, where one of the services they offer is medication education. This feels like somebody who doesn't want to deal with their kid anymore signs over their estate or creates some kind of account for them. And then these other people are in charge of things, or when they die, they give their estate to them through this proxy parent. I don't know. I'm used to hearing, like, the word proxy in terms of, like, an advanced directive, a healthcare proxy, like somebody who can say, like, no, this person doesn't want to be locked up.
Right.
So this is a bit
conscience. Using, I'm not sure.
Yeah, it really is, I'm just looking at it, you know, that they, Just as a family would, Proxy Parent Foundation may provide help in finding and moving to suitable housing, medication education, obtaining and maintaining health care, homeless and criminal justice outreach, helping the individual when they are in the hospital or in need of hospitalization, life skills tutoring, helping in obtaining meaningful work or education, and social activities, visits, friendships, shopping, and entertainment. Proxy Parent Foundation bridges the gap between the mental health system and the need of the individual. Proxy Parent Foundation can provide its personal support services in the here and now, so a trusting, continuous relationship can be established. Once you become an enrolled member of Proxy Parent Foundation, Proxy Parent Foundation will plan with the family as to how to successfully engage your relative with a personal support specialist under our pay-as-you-go plan. Please contact us for more. So, you know, before you die, you get involved with us, and we'll set something up so everybody knows this is the deal. And you pay as you go along, and then when you die, you give us all of your money, and we'll piecemeal it out to your relative and make sure that, you know, if they're involved with the homeless system, that, you know, there's somebody there advocating for them that they get drugs. Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and you know, I'm sure there are family members out there who really don't think that way at all and are really concerned about what's going to happen when they're not there. I mean, that's also, you know, not, I'm not saying that that's not a real thing, but it just seems to me that there's, you know, whatever, special trust services for people to have their kid monitored for the rest of their life, even after they're gone. And so, you know, for people who have, who don't have good relationships with their family, the families want, where is there an advocate in this process of creating this personal support specialist plan that they're going to have through, anyway, California is definitely got its issues ahead of it, and things like Laura's Law in California, which is like their version of the involuntary outpatient commitment law, like another county recently adopted it, and so now I think it's Orange County that now has you know, another involuntary outpatient commitment law. If you'd like to call in, the number is area code 267-521-0167, area code 267-521-0167, and the toll-free line is area code 855-346-3351, 855-346-3351. So there's plenty of interesting stuff that's going on here, and I wanted to also point to a book that is forthcoming called Psychiatry Disrupted, Theorizing and Crafting the Revolution, and the R is in parentheses. And it's edited by Bonnie Burstow, Brenda LaFrancois, and Shandela Diamonds, with a preface by Kate Millett and a foreword by Paula Kaplan. This promises to be a phenomenal new book coming out, and very excited about talking about it and getting people to know. There's also a order form that's attached, and it's going up on the, it's up on the Facebook, and I think that it's really going to be incredible. So it says there's growing international resistance to the oppressiveness of psychiatry. While previous studies have critiqued psychiatry, Psychiatry Disrupted goes beyond theorizing what is wrong with it to the theorizing how we might stop it. Introducing readers to the arguments and rationale for opposing psychiatry, the book combines perspectives from anti-psychiatry and critical psychiatry activism, mad activism, anti-racist, critical and radical disability studies, as well as feminist, Marxist, and anarchist thought. The editors and contributors are activists and academics, adult education and social work professors, psychologists, prominent leaders in the psychiatric survivor movement, and artists from across Canada, England, and the United States. From chapters discussing feminist opposition to the medicalization of human experience, to the links between psychiatry and neoliberalism, to internal tensions within the various movements and different identities from which people organize, the collection theorizes psychiatry while contributing to a range of scholarship and presenting a comprehensive overview of resistance to psychiatry in the academy and in the community. And it just promises to be an absolutely phenomenal book, Psychiatry Disrupted. Yeah, right? And Brenda LeFrancois, who has been on the Electroshock show and will be coming on again, was involved with this, and one of the editors, Bonnie Burstow, was, and she'll be on June 26th. It looks like really, really phenomenal. Psychiatry
really
Disrupted.
They experiment on people, all right? My psychiatrist was experimenting on me. He used an experimental procedure when he did the electroshock, and he violated consent. He was getting consent to me right before right as I was on the stretcher, right before they put me under, I was signing a consent form so he could switch electrode placement. And I've been trying to find information about this. I may have brought this up before. It's called bifrontal electrode placement, and it really is an experimental. There's not much research done. Hasn't been much research done on it, but I think because I've talked to so many other shock survivors, I think it's created a whole dimension of other problems that I'm having that it seems that they aren't having. So if anyone out there listening hears this and knows anything about bifrontal electrode placement, I don't know, call in or maybe you could find a way to contact me or something through Lauren. I don't know.
And the number to call in is area code 267-521-0167. And the toll-free line is 855-346-3351. 855-346-3351. Because I remember you bringing this up, and I'm just... There is an article on the NCBI, NIMNIH.gov on PubMed.
Yeah, there are a few things out there, but and in textbooks that I've seen, bits and pieces, they mention it, but there hasn't been a whole lot. I can't seem to find... I've read so many accounts of other people, and I haven't come across anyone who's experienced this. Go ahead.
I'm wondering if and you're in touch with Deborah Schwarzkopf, right?
Yeah, I am.
And so I'm wondering if through there maybe a specific question on her survey, on her questionnaire, could be added for that. But
yeah.
I'll tell you, you know, you say you were experimenting on, and I'll say,
yeah,
because this article says a critical examination of bifrontal electroconvulsive therapy, clinical efficacy, cognitive side effects, and directions for future research. And if they're still doing research, the people that are doing that are involved in those research are people who are being experimented on, and so. They don't hide that they're doing research on people, but yeah, to be able to talk to other people who have had this particular experience, if you have had this happen to you and you want to get in touch with Jason, you can contact me or call in now, area code 267-521-0167. Or Jason, if you have a Facebook or email or anything like that you want to give people out, I mean, that's, you know, up to you, but that's a way you can also... I think that this is part of what the original ideas of support were about, of being able to connect with other people who have had a similar experience. And while I could see the horror and the torture of it, I haven't myself. So I think it's important that those connections can get made, and
mm-hmm.
I hope that, you know, the people who are listening, you know, if you're going to be a first-time caller, you know, most welcome, and, you know, feel free to call in.
Mm-hmm. The psychiatrist who did it, you know, was involved with the TMS research. Like I said, I was in a study for that, and he was also involved with transcranial magnetic stimulation, and I've seen those machines in the building, in the room where they were doing research. You know, he's involved in that. He still is. And I just have a feeling that he was just sort of curious, you know, because I know that the placement for the magnet, I think sometimes it's used in this bifrontal location. It's used like that. There's only one source where the magnet is pulsing into your brain. And those can cause seizures too, if it's not at the right setting or something. You know, these magnetic disturbance, this powerful electromagnet, like you would see in an MRI machine has a magnet similar to what the TMS has. It can really disturb things in there. They don't really know what they're doing. I mean, they just don't know what they're doing, and it's all experimentation. So, but I just have a feeling that he was just sort of wanted to see what would happen. I mean, I don't know. I really don't know what, you know, it's just another, you know, it's just an added worry for me. It's another dimension to it because I had neuropsychological testing, and it showed that it's one of, among other problem areas that I have, besides just memory, it said I had severe executive function impairment. I have trouble organizing, planning, and, you know, getting things done and setting goals. And I wish that, you know, I hope if any, you know, if, I just can't find much info on it. I even called Peter Bregan, and I think I left a message with him. I almost talked to him once, but I wanted to know if he knew anything or someone, you know, if he had come across anyone. I know a lot of people contact him. And just not sure what kind of specific damage that's done, that's all.
I will put the word out to people and ask around, also on Facebook and such, and talk to people that I know of. But I think that this is, you know, the idea that anytime they're mixing any of these drugs and trying this with that, or electricity this way or that way, or with magnets this way or that way, it is a type of, like, well, let's see what happens if we do this. I mean, I remember somebody, a psychiatrist, once using those exact words. Well, let's see what happens if we add.
Right.
And you know, let's try this. And so it is experimental to a large,
I mean,
you know,
I,
to
yeah.
every degree.
I mean, I understand that medicine is an art. You know, it's not just science. It really is an art, even real medicine. Because people have said to me, you know, well, you know, you did this happened to you, and, you know, medicine is an art, so that's okay, you know. But their experimentation isn't even just scientifically based. So it really is kind of a perverse, call it like an anti-art or something. I don't know what you call it.
Exactly. It's awful. So I just want to make sure it's bifrontal electroshock, right?
Yeah, bifrontal.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm just.
And the thing is that most of it, I had 13 like that. He did five. He started out with five right unilateral. And then the next 13 I had were this thing called bifrontal electrode placement, and the last five were bitemporal. And he also claimed that was no longer used. That's what he told my family. That's what he told us, that they no longer used bitemporal, that it was right unilateral. Ultra brief pulse, right unilateral. I was supposed to have like 6. I ended up having all this stuff. I don't know.
So it went from
really...
right unilateral to bifrontal.
Yeah. And an unusual number, too, 13. And why he gave me 23, I don't know. Maybe he suspected I was schizophrenic or something like that. You know, usually, it was given to, my diagnosis at the time was MDD or treatment-resistant depression. That's what they were telling me. But really, I just think it was, I was exhibiting, drug damage, iatrogenic, brain disease. And that's essentially what, he was treating. That's what I think. And, and if they did lobotomies, I probably would have, in the 1 or 2 years following, if they still did the old lobotomies the way they were doing them on the numbers of people they were doing them in the 50s, that's probably where I would be headed because after this happened, I was becoming, aggressive, violent, aggressive towards my family and stuff because my head was so messed up and I was so scared and they wouldn't really do anything. I was like, help me get a lawyer because I'm going to be disabled for the rest of my life, And everybody kind of just shut down. I mean, it was didn't just traumatize me. It was trauma for my family and stuff too. When they treat us, they just don't understand. The way psychiatry approaches, the individual. It's just an individual problem, that there's nothing else affecting me. That I have this brain disorder. And then it's not,
this is why it's a crime and that people should be held responsible and there should be a lawyer who wants to take this up that this is the kind of thing why lawyers are supposed to exist to call out when things are happening
Yeah, it's hard to sue a psychiatrist. I mean, it's hard. But there's only been one UCT case that is one out of not an out of court settlement, but one victory that was Peggy Salters, who was a nurse, who had it. She could go back to work, but of course it's like I don't have anything to lose. Look at me, I'm unemployed. I'm already on disability, so I don't know. I don't know how long it's going to take to really recover to the point where I feel like I can try to go to school or get some work. I've had trouble even just volunteering, I just do things when I can, like at the drop-in and stuff. But really, I'm just there just trying to warn people and wake them up, which is hard to do. I'd like to post those declarations, just read at the drop-in.
I want to give the website for that. The one that I found it on is psychiatrize.org /Leonard Roy Frank MISC articles on psychiatry /declarationofprinciples.pdf.
I'm going to print that out.
Yeah, and I think that when, this idea of warning people, big, huge warning signs, flying engines, sirens, I mean, this should be on the front page of every newspaper instead of the scam that psychiatry is pulling.
Yeah.
What would happen if the everyday average person who has nothing to do with psychiatry in terms of delivering it, creating its policy, or being on the receiving end, was informed about this. You know, the part of the problem is that the people who are deciding who is an expert are the people who are making the rules. And so when the media contacts them, who do I talk to? Well, you know, they're not going to send them to somebody like you or I who is going to, you know, slam everything that they're doing. They're going to send them to somebody who's going to make them look good in the media. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's no secret that one of the jobs of the commissioners of the State Office of Mental Health is to keep the Office of Mental Health out of the media. You know, with any negative press and only positive press people like Tori and the Treatment Advocacy Center and all of them are, you know, there is a huge industry here that they are fueling. And, you know, somebody said to me earlier, like, Tim Murphy didn't write those lines. You know, somebody wrote those lines for him. That's straight out of NAMI TAC Tory. That's all that is. He's just reading lines. And even he is a trained psychologist. I mean, he should lose his license for that. Do you know what I mean? Anybody who's out there supporting this without giving full alternatives and informed choice to people should be losing their licenses. You know, if people want the drugs, if they want this, if they want that, fine. You know, if they know what they want, if they know everything that possibly could go wrong and they want it, whatever. But they should not be allowed to be continuing to sell this myth and fraud and conspiracy and racketeering. I love that RICO thing. This is going to be my new thing. RICO. And you know, and you look at what, you know, Ray Unziger, you know, 1984, to be a mental patient is to be stigmatized, ostracized, socialized, patronized, and psychiatrized. This is it, and they're turning us all into mental patients. And go ahead.
I really feel so helpless and powerful and finding this movement and has really been one of the few things, you know, that I feel it's helping me, you know, want to stay alive. So it really is like a,
the movement's amazing for that.
Yeah.
And it's important. And when people don't have it and when people don't know, this is where we wind up losing people, and that, you know, people just when the life that's carved out for you is a life of a mental patient, you don't really have very much to look forward to. And so when we can get to people and let them know that there's another way and it doesn't have to be like this, I think it's so important. And there are so many different groups and so many different people all over the world, literally all over the world, who are doing this stuff.
And I meet young people, too. You know, I see them bring new people in, young people, all drugged up, and they don't have a clue. I try to alert them, you know.
At
the drop-in center, I try to tell them what they're volunteering for, you know, really. You know, I tell them about myself. I tell them about mind freedom. I tell them about other people who've been taken for a ride.
It really is. And they're being brought into it. Young people are being brought into it at an incredibly young age. 0 to 2, you know,
younger and younger,
3-year-olds
yeah.
on Haldol. It's such a monstrous problem that people are up against. And Youth Power, an organization in New York State, is actually having a university for Youth Power University for a couple of days in June. I think it's July 27th to the 31st or something like that. I'm trying to find the web page where the information was. And they're going to, you know, be, you know, living in the college dorm for, I think it's people up to 30 years of age, and that they're going to have, you know, classes during the day, and there'll be, like, an orientation and a graduation. Here it is. They have a newsletter that comes out, and it says, so Youth Power is pleased to announce an exciting new opportunity for young leaders, July 28th through the 31st, 2014. YP will host a conference modeled after a college experience. University of Youth Power will take place in Albany, New York at the College of St. Rose. We are inviting young people ages 18 to 30 to register with a major of peer advocacy or systems advocacy. Registered students will be provided overnight accommodations in the dormitory, as well as meals on campus. And so it promises to be a really interesting and groundbreaking kind of event of where people will be trained and maybe become inspired to, you know, not be so intimidated by this world of, you know, quote-unquote, you know, academia, and to get involved and learn more about systems advocacy and advocacy on behalf of other people who are institutionalized. And I think that that's a really great thing for young people to be knowing that's out there, and also getting to parents somehow and educating them about what they're doing to their kids. If you'd like to call in, the number is area code 267-521-0167, and toll-free line is 855-346-3351. 855-346-3351.
I pulled up these principles from Phoenix Rising, published in Toronto. I'm going to print that out. Maybe I'll post a copy at the drop-in.
Yeah. So let me know how that goes for you.
I put up on the bulletin board a thing for the APA protest. That was the last one in New York. I put up a thing for that, and I show people videos and stuff like that.
That's great.
Have you heard of Asylum magazine from the UK? The magazine for Democratic Psychology. Yeah, that's a really. I get that magazine. It's really good. It's a lot like Madness Network News. I have seen some of those too, but it's a lot like that. It's a UK. I think they're going to come out with an electroshock a special issue that's coming up, because I did give them a statement. Actually, someone helped me write. I called someone named Cheryl Prax, who does speak out against psychiatry in UK. They do activist stuff there. And I did give her a statement, which she transcribed, and then that may be included in the issue, which is coming up. I can't give you a date, but it's a quarterly magazine. I get the print one.
That's great. And people who might be interested in checking it out online, it's asylumonline.net, and they have archives of all of their stuff and sample articles and things, and they put out a lot of really interesting articles and topics.
It's
definitely a good resource for people to be aware of. Thanks. I think mm-hmm. this is, you know, for people who are just maybe learning about this, to know that there's a lot more out there than what you've been told from the traditional system, or even in, you know, peer specialist trainings or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the early leaders of this would, you know, I don't think that they would be supporting the way things are going right now. And certainly those who still are active in the movement have made dissent about what's happening. And I still am not quite over that Center for Medicaid, Medicare Services article that said people who are involved with peer support services wound up having higher costs for drugs and psychiatric services than people who weren't involved with peer services. And so I think that this is a big question that we have to really sit back and ask, what are we doing and how do we get back to our roots? How do we get back to our roots?
I guess also a lot of the early people were, you know, the institution, a lot of them had experienced, you know, maybe longer institutionalizations and things like that, you know?
Well,
it was a different climate, you know, not just the 60s and, you know, and 70s, not just, but it was also a different climate that came out, they experienced the system in a little bit of a different way. Now it seems it's even more, it's just more,
sure.
With all this community, you know, these community, assisted outpatient treatment and all this other stuff that's being done in the community that looks.
Right, because it became about, you know, therapy became in vogue for a while, and then people, you know, some people really actually like the drugs because they're like speed, some of them,
yeah.
Or, you know, like they alter the, you know, but just because people aren't being institutionalized and the because of deinstitutionalization and how the climate changed, it created a less of a call because it looks better now. So if you've never been there, you don't know what this original fight was, and you don't realize, kind of like almost like people sometimes I feel don't realize the oppression that they're under in quote unquote community services, because they, you know, they're getting what they quote unquote need. But, you know, when you ask people, well, what about this or that, all of a sudden they're like, oh no, well, I'm not getting any, no, I don't get that. No. So what they're being told what they want and need. And when you're told something long enough, eventually, especially when you're on these drugs, it's easy to convince somebody that the system is right and they're wrong and they just need to, you know, play along and follow through. And I think that's always the big betrayal of it, when people come to and kind of realize, wait a second, what's going on here? And then they, you know, start doing their own math and they go, well, this doesn't add up. You know, this isn't the right way to go. And you know, and luckily many of us stumble over this movement, but you've got to be really sometimes right place, right time in order to know about it, because the mainstream media just doesn't give access.
Yeah.
It disacknowledges it, and even those who are in, you know, leadership positions who are supposed to be bringing about the perspectives of the quote-unquote movement say that, you know, if you take an anti-psychiatry position, you're not credible. And
if there is any official mention of the, you know, the anti-psychiatry, it's always used in a derogatory way. Yeah, I think so.
Right, and those who work in the, you know, quote-unquote peer industry do everything they can to distance themselves from anti-psychiatry, which is the reason why they have their jobs in the first place. And so, and again, this is a structural issue. This isn't about individuals, but it's about, for people who feel like that the people in power aren't going to listen if you talk like this, and so the language gets softened. And then 2-3 generations down, and we're having these trainings every 3-4 months all over the world, you know, tens of thousands of people being brought in, you know, monthly or you know, annually in different places. They don't know what the original language was, and so they fight up against it as much as the average person who doesn't know about it, because it's what they've been, you know, drilled into their heads to think that that's what's right, and so everybody's just being misinformation, and
I guess it's tempting for some people, you know, at some point. I mean, I'm not talking about all the people now, but I guess it's tempting to maybe take you know, temper your views or become more moderate or something. But I just don't think that there've got to be people who are it's too scary. It's too frightening what's happening.
And of course there are people. I want to make sure that I say that. I'm not saying anybody who works in one of these positions just is sold out and is just going along with the program. That's absolutely not true. But they're few and far between in terms of, and I think the other side is that people really think that they're going to accomplish something good. But there's a lot of diversity inside of what's good, and the continued expansion of the psychiatric system by adding a formalized quote-unquote peer position into it doesn't sound like something that's tearing down the system.
You just said it's just like becoming another. It's a kind of another, form of a mental health technician or something like that. Just another thing along those lines. That's what
you're a case manager.
I mean, I know I've met good people, good supportive, genuine people, who work in these settings. I'm not saying that everyone's some kind of, but still, they work in the settings, and I've mentioned it to people who are working in these settings. This is what they did to me, okay? And this is what, you're working in a system that does this to people, that enslaves people. And I've pissed some people off. The last time I was hospitalized, the last time I was locked up, which was looking too long ago, maybe a year and a half ago. And it was a result. I had electroshock. I was pissed off. I was saying, this is a brain injury. My doctor injured my brain. I was flipping out. The police were called. I was taken to the ER, and I spent 10 days over Christmas in the hospital, and
you saying this to when the police were called?
This was when I was in the hospital. There's a person that works there. He's an orderly. He's been working in hospitals for a long time, and he genuinely, I think, tries to help and give them good advice, but there's someone who I'd known and I'd kind of trusted when I was in there, who seemed to be sort of like a Dutch uncle kind of figure who works in these places.
Okay.
And I had just started reading Thomas Oz and other people. I had just discovered this. And it was like, I just had this big realization, what was really going on. Because, if my doctors are injuring my brain and calling it treatment, something's wrong. And so I started to research it. And I'd already spent 20 years being on drugs, and I was, falling apart physically and mentally, and then I just discovered all this information, and I approached this man and said, it's someone I trusted, and I told him, and it pissed him off. I mean, and then he was after me. He was watching me after that. I was in for a few more days. And it just looked like what I told him, it's just bad news.
Yeah, and people, have pride in what they do, and they're putting all their effort into it, and they're working, and they're thinking that they're doing the right thing. And that when you tell them that, this is really not the right thing, they get personal about it. And it's hard to separate that out. And it's like, I sometimes say, this is the time for professional distance, folks. Like, this is, when we're actually talking about the real issues here, this isn't about any of us. This is about the issues. And every time we say, shock us gently, that's just allowing them to continue to do it. And it's giving them evidence that people think that this is okay. Mm-hmm. And it's not okay. And there are many of us who are not okay with it. I am going to pull up. I'm going to open line 207. Line 207, I'm not sure if you were trying to get through or not, but your line is open.
I'm just listening now.
Okay, thanks. Sorry, I've just been having technical problems. So I'll put you back on hold. If you want to talk, just press 1.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. I think that, one of the things we're going to be talking with Dr. Bonnie Burstow about on July 26th is June 26th, is how do you make concrete strategic efforts, and what are strategies that work in reaching across to people, and how do you make strategic activism? Because the idea of when you're trying to stop something from happening, to go to another group of people to try to get something else to happen instead winds up splitting the efforts and taking the focus off of what you were trying to stop happening, and then we have to fight two things because the people that we go to never really wind up helping us. And so instead of getting, you know, just for psychiatry, we're getting also early prevention, intervention, and drugging. And I think that these are where the problems lie. That so now it's doubled up, and that there are people, you know, there are people who believe that if somebody got, you know, quote unquote help early, that, you know, a tragedy wouldn't occur, and that's just not realistic. It's not how it works. And when people have been brought to the attention of police, like there's even a picture of Jared Miller at some libertarian gun debate standing with the sheriff, pictured with the sheriff. And so these people know these people. They are not unknown. They're not at all questioned. Elliot Rodger wasn't questioned, you know, wasn't suspected when he went to the police. The police can't tell. So that's why even like this law, like the new law that they're trying to put forward in New York about anybody who's incarcerated needs a treatment, you know, quote-unquote treatment plan prior to being let out is ludicrous, because they're saying that one of the things is that the parole officer can be the person who winds up deciding whether or not somebody needs to go straight to the institution.
Yeah, that's outrageous. You've committed a crime, you've served your time, you get out, I mean, it should be done. You don't need more punishment, you know.
Right, and the
control.
Kendra's Law expansion deletes the period of time that you were incarcerated or institutionalized. So they can still go back 48 months before the first day of your institutionalization or incarceration. And so if you've done, you know, 10 years for something, you know, they can go back 10 years and 48 months and upon your release give you a psychiatric plan that you have to comply with. And if you don't comply with it, you're getting sent to a mental institution.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but, you know, jails and prisons are not places where people, they're not quote unquote healthy places. They're not places. So if somebody displays quote unquote psychiatric anything while in jail or prison, like that's not a natural environment. Like somebody who can handle that without having some kind of emotional distress.
Yeah.
About the realities of their day-in, day-out life, like, and then they're just drugging them and solitary confinement and these horrendous things totally dehumanized. And then you wonder why somebody's experiencing some kind of emotional crisis. Like, even just solitary confinement has been proven to create organic brain injury. And that's real. And people don't understand that, you know, what it's like to be in solitary confinement for any length of time over one's objection. And of course, if somebody just wanted to be alone for a little while and go to their cell, I'm sure that that's not allowed. You know what I mean? Like, so.
Right. Well, in the hospital, these things are therapy. So, you know, in prison,
right. They're
punishments, deterrents, and corrections or whatever you'd call them. But in psychiatry, they're therapy.
Right. And they're not. And that's, again, where the fraud is brought in. If you'd like to talk about this or anything else, area code 267-521-0167. And the toll-free line, if you need it, is area code 855-346-3351. And so, yeah, so we have all of these people that we're controlling and that are, you know, this fascist state of psychiatry where it really is a therapeutic state. It really is social mm-hmm. control. And, you know, I'm going to bring this up again. People, you know, every time I talk to somebody who hasn't heard about this, they think that I'm kidding or reading another satirical article of some sort. But this was on NPR.org, on National Public Radio, under treatment by John Hamilton, May 27th, 2014. So this is really fresh. And the title of the article is The Military Plans to Test Brain Implants to Fight Mental Disorders. And the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA, is launching a $70 million program to help military personnel with psychiatric disorders using electric devices implanted in the brain. And
you know, in the military, they have to follow orders. They can't refuse. I mean, they can't even try to refuse. They're under orders to. I don't know if in every circumstance or, but you know, if they're told to take their medications or I guess undergo some kind of treatment, they have to do it. You know, they can be penalized.
It really is. I mean, for people to understand that it's for post-traumatic stress is a criteria, or depression or anxiety. These are the criteria for it, and it says clearly that. You know, this will allow researchers to, quote, record directly from the brain at a level of resolution that's never been done before. And then it goes on to say later, by monitoring the electrical activity of brain cells, the researchers will be able to study how brain circuits behave in real time. And because many of the volunteers have depression, anxiety, and other problems, it should be possible to figure out how these conditions have changed specific circuits in the brain. Chang says, if we are able to understand how the circuit has gone awry, that may give us some very critical clues as to how we may be able to reverse that. And so it goes on to say, once the scientists have those clues, they hope to design tiny electronic implants that can stimulate the cells in faulty brain circuits. We know that once you start putting stimulation into the brain, this will change in response. Yeah, it'll
I mean, how do they know that these faulty, you know, these supposed faulty brain circuits aren't just part of the brain's natural evolution and healing? Why are they invading people like this?
Yeah, and faulty, you know, supposed is absolutely right. I mean,
without a shred
of evidence of any of this, without any kind of anything, and to do this to veterans who have, you know, been to war, seen things mm-hmm. that most of us will never know of, had experiences that most of us couldn't even fathom, and then come back, and this is what our government is doing to them. Thank you for your service.
Dangerous experiments.
It really is so dangerous, and I just want to again say, if you're a veteran listening, Paula Kaplan's work is phenomenal, and check out the When Johnny and Jane Come Marching Home project, because I think that's a great, valuable resource. But this is like MK Ultra out in open. It's out in the open. They're not hiding that they're trying to control our brains. They're not hiding that they're, you know, screwing around with, you know, electrical, you know, components of the brain that we know nothing about. I was reading an article the other day, like the actual current for electroshock, for example, is like 600 times the strength of electrical activity in the brain. And so, like, what are we doing here? And then implanting, so when you hear of people like Alexis, who, you know, shot up the Navy Yard saying that, you know, a veteran, saying that he, you know, has something implanted in his brain and he's getting electronic magnetic waves, and that this is what's going on, and everybody says, oh, he's, you know, he's delusional, he's psychotic. Well, but watch out, veterans, because this is what DARPA is doing. This is, you know, why isn't why is this not even questioned? Why hasn't this come back in the news since this came out? You know, because they're not doing it out of nowhere. They're not, you know, just they're not starting. And it's a 5-year program that they've got $70 million taxpayer dollars are going to this. Why? If anyone has an answer and would like to call in, the number is area code 267-521-0167, and the guest call-in line toll-free is area code 855-346-3351. 855-346-3351. And so it's really important that people remember these things, and that remember, like, you know, Jason, you said before about, like, finding the movement and what a big assistance that's been to you over time. And you know, when you look at the Declaration of Principles, right, and it's got that list of plain English versus psychiatric jargon, and so things like anger, enthusiasm, joy, fear, you know, this is all, like, human emotions and stuff. How that all winds up being psychiatrized and medicalized and then drugged, you know, for people to know that these things are okay, and they may be hard, they may be painful, they may be, you know, really exciting sometimes, you know, because you're human and you have human emotions. And why somebody who can't experience, like, an extreme emotion or extreme sadness or extreme joy or any of that kind of stuff, or just sadness and joy to begin with, why they get to make the rules about how, you know, humans are supposed to behave is beyond me. Like, somebody who can't comprehend being so so sad that you know, want to make drastic measures, like, why, and they see that as an illness, that sadness is coming from somewhere. Some kind of loss, some kind of disappointment, some kind of betrayal, some kind of abuse. That these are real things that people encounter. Even just, like, economic oppression, you know, can cause a person to feel fear and sadness and despair, and because I don't know how I'm going to pay the bills in 2 days, right? Like, this kind of thing that psychiatry then writes off as just, you know, a psychiatric label. And for people who are listening who may be in struggle to find information about the movement where you are locally and to connect with people and
get measures help. I just reminded me of something. You know, have you ever seen those old training videos? I guess some of them are like combat psychiatry or like psychiatry during World War II. I mean, some of the treatments were developed. Electroshock, they used that on the German soldiers in the trenches, you know, people who didn't want to go back to the front line, and they would electroshock them and then send them back. You know,
I
can see that.
Yeah, and Freud.
I mean, that's how some of these things were developed, and then they tried them out on people. I mean, you know, in that situation, you're being sent back to the front line to die, and you shut down, or you become violent or something, and when you're treated, and then just sent on your way. So
it really is, and like, even Freud, I'm trying to pull up the document where I have it, but I wrote about this in the D Voice thing about. They were going to try one of the psychiatrists for, like, crimes against humanity or something to that degree around the use of electroshock on soldiers. And I believe it was in Vienna, but it may have been in Germany. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure where. But Freud came to his defense and said that he was sure that he wasn't using an unfair amount of electricity or something like that. I'll try to find the exact quote. But that's
right.
Like, you know, yeah.
Malingering, you know, I guess that's why they would, these soldiers are, yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry, guys.
No, but that's right, and that they just need to be, shocked a little, and they'll be fine. And I mm-hmm. wish I was faster.
Interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah, it really is. But it's such a trouble because when you look back in at the history, when you look back at the history of it, it really is so convoluted, and there is a complete intentional design of this. So in the dissertation, it was I'm just trying to see where it found. So it was von Jura Kaler's attack for his practices. He was Freud's contemporary and a notorious anti-Semite who would later become an enthusiastic Nazi. Who is this who wrote this? I think it was Grab in 1994 who wrote about von Jura. And so von Jura was also responsible for an early use of punishment and behavior modification in the form of severe electroshocks used on soldiers rendered to his institution, the University of Vienna, for shell shock. Freud would later flee from the Nazis in Vienna to the United States. However, in 1918, it was part of his, quote, testimony when it was considered whether von Jura ought to be prosecuted for his crimes and how he treated people. Andrew Skull quotes Freud that he was, quote, personally convinced that Professor Wagner Jurig would never have allowed the electric stimulus to be intensified to a cruel pitch. And von Jurig, by Freud's testimony, was not prosecuted. And that's in Andrew Skull's Madhouse on page 87.
That just reminded me of something else about, they brought something like that back and actually used it more recently, something called, and they used the shock, some of the earlier shock machines were set up to do something called subclinical or something like that, electroshock, where the shock wouldn't knock you unconscious, but it was still painful, and they actually used that. You know, there's just another variation of the ECT, multiple monitored ECT, where they would do it multiple times in one session, but there was something called subclinical, and I think that's similar to what this guy may have been doing, to these soldiers or something.
It really is a shock, and so this is before the electroshock, electroconvulsive treatment was created.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 1918, but still the use of electric stimulus of where they were shocking people, it came under, and then, Freud, and that's the whole problem, is that these people have this power that if they say something, everybody else who may be in a position of interrogating or questioning what's happening then just goes, oh, okay, and let's get back to business and move on, and this was a terrible mistake, I'm sorry for ever asking you to, be involved with any of this or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they, those in power remain in power, and those being subjected remain being subjected, and more are then targeted. It's almost, frightening every time, psychiatry expands, or every time psychiatry gets in trouble in the public eye, they expand,
mm-hmm.
like, tenfold. It's,
mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. Instead of it going and being eliminated, for some reason or other, despite all the information the public is getting at that moment of where they're being uncovered, they wind up further supporting it. And
yeah.
I just don't know why.
Their powerful lobby group, the APA.
And the pharmaceutical industry.
And the pharmaceutical industry.
And the device industry, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
These aren't, the FDA... Loretta Wilson and John Breeding and others have been on
mm-hmm.
talking about the FDA, and to think that the panel conclusively decided that it should be kept a Class 3 device with the exception of the people who were making money off of it, who thought it should be lowered to a Class 2 device, the psychiatrists and the device makers, and why they have a vote, I don't know. And why the FDA is still even thinking about this, why it wasn't immediately said, okay, this is off the market. You don't want to pay to test the efficacy of this. It's going to cost you too much, or
yeah.
It's going to be too unethical to do the testing that's required. Take this thing off the market. And of course, you know, I did see that meme where they have the legislators wearing all of the, like, NASCAR, like, all the sponsorships all over their suits.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, so you have to know, like, who is your representative really representing, because it sure doesn't feel like it's the people most of the time. And so, you know, good old democracy is, you know, the Constitution, you know, doesn't apply. And when I talk to these people who are, like, real, you know, adherence to the Constitution, they keep yelling at me, but it's not the law, it's not the law. And I keep telling them, but it is the law. They have special laws, and they keep saying they're not constitutional. And it's like, well, of course it's not constitutional, but that's not going to stop, you know, if you start yelling to a cop who's coming to pick you up for an evaluation that they're violating your constitutional rights, like, because they're like, well, that's all you have to say. And it's like, no, dude, that's probably the last thing you can say. Like, I mean, not that I really, you know, believe that either, but the idea is that they are, with state power, sanctioned to do what it is they're doing to us. Mm-hmm. And it's not constitutional, and it's certainly a violation of human rights. And so this civil rights movement persists, and, you know, we have mm-hmm. to figure out a way to get to the mainstream media using the language that is really, truly representative of what's happening to us. And if we keep talking, we will. And,
yeah.
And if people who are listening get involved locally, get involved at the national and international levels, there's so many things that are happening. It's just really, really important. And so, again, on June 19th, there will be a small vigil in remembrance of Esmond Green, who was murdered by neglect at Kings County Hospital Psychiatric Emergency Room on June 19th. It will be from 4 to 6 p.m., and the address for that is 410 Winthrop Street in Brooklyn, New York, in front of Building R at Kings County. Shortly after Ms. Green's murder, they shut down Building G, where she died, and they invested millions of dollars in this new monstrous building, which they call the Behavioral Health Center. And I've mentioned this, and other people also have been talking about the issues with calling this behavioral health, and how it's another switchover where they're trying to hide what it is they're doing.
It's just like mental hygiene and all that stuff.
Right. And that everybody has behavior. You know, and that on some levels I feel like it's a response to the problems with the illness model, because they have no proof. They can, you know, prove, quote-unquote, behavior. And so if you don't look like everybody else, or you like music that isn't popular among the people that you're hanging out with, or you have different values or social or cultural ideas about the way things should be, and you're, you know, one out of however many people who think in a different way, and people start to say, well, you know, you need help because you're not behaving like the rest of us, you know, this becomes a new whole land for targeting people. Sexual practices, involvement with, you know, drugs or alcohol or any of that stuff. Like, these are all questions that have mandated screenings now under the Affordable Care Act, like whether or not you're practicing safer sex, whether or not you're drinking or using drugs, whether or not you're depressed or not. Like, these are all before you're going to be able to get to whatever medical condition you are at your doctor's office for. There's a whole list of questions that is now going to be asked of you that is in an electronic record that is hooked to your insurance company and that is very much permanent, that you don't have a space to write inside of what your perspective of the situation is.
No personal freedom. It's a total clampdown on your personal freedom in a really scary way.
It truly is scary, and of much concern, and that it shouldn't be allowed, and that people are just being blatantly lied to. The 60 Minutes special that was on the other day is a perfect example just how they could be connecting us, or that video that Amy in Colorado is trying to get everybody to watch on that was on PBS, Rocky Mountain PBS, called Untreated. Like, you know, that people who frequently, you know, who use the emergency room, you know, a lot are quote-unquote frequent flyers, and that, you know, what really needs to happen is everybody needs to be taken off the streets, and we just, you know, and so it's this population of where they're going to, you know, round us up and hold us in some institution until they, you know, create another shower room and march us in to be gassed. I mean,
right.
It's kind of hard not to look at this like East Germany.
Yeah.
So these are the issues that we're up against, and I want to thank everybody who's listening, and if you want to call in the future, please do. You know, I think that while we talk about things that we talk about, I also want to hear what you want to talk about, and so the only way I'll really know is if you call and tell me. So I don't want it to seem like the conversation is limited by anything other than, you know, what you want to be talking about, and that those things should be brought in and heard by people, and that there's a lot of value and there are a lot of options for people to get involved in things like Mind Freedom International. Go check out psychrights.org, the Law Project for Psychiatric Rights, and there's just a wealth of information about there. Yira Shirov's Alliance for Human Research Protection. And then, you know, things like the Icarus Project and Freedom Center's guide to safely withdrawing from psychiatric drugs, the trauma-informed guide for engaging women in peer support, trauma-informed peer support. There's tons of alternatives that people can tap into, and you know, a Google search around this I think will be useful. And so I want to, Jason, thank you for calling in tonight and talking with me. And everybody who's out there listening, I'm just wondering, do you have any final thoughts before we close out? Or
just I did what you last mentioned, you know, with the mental marching the people into the gas, you know, the gas chamber. I mean, the T4 program in Germany was all the people who were involved with that. These were highly respected. These were the most respected people in their field, the psychiatrists. These weren't you know, those were the ones who designed the program and headed it up. And it wasn't because, you know, this was before Hitler really rose to power. This was psychiatry. It was their idea, you know. So I just wanted to add that. But thanks a lot for the program.
Absolutely, and that's well documented. Even Tory has documented that. And you know, at the same time denying any responsibility for the continuation of it today, And,
right.
you know, people need to be held responsible. And Sue Wittenberg calls in a lot and calls this psychiatric genocide. And
mm-hmm.
and it is, they are going after us. They take our children away from us. They put us on drugs that shorten our lifespan significantly, 25
mm-hmm.
to 30 years. What we're doing to children, who only knows what the long-term outcome of what's going to happen
mm-hmm.
to children because of these issues. And it is urgent that people start responding and you know, do your own research. Go out there and start Googling things and looking around for stuff that's not supported by the government or NAMI or TAC or any of these places that get their voices heard in the news, and find information that is truly alternative. And websites like endofshock.com, ectjustice.com, mindfreedom.org, psychrights.org, there are places here that you'll find links and resources to tons of other information as a starting point. If you'd like to be a guest on the show or have an idea for a show or know a human rights violation that has been committed, being committed, or a death that you think needs to be investigated and have some attention called to, you can call the Talk with Kenny tip line 24 hours a day except for when we're on air, and that's at area code 718-273-8708, area code 718-273-8708. We're going to have a lot of exciting shows coming in the future, specials, and we will continue holding open lines every night. And so I hope that you will be inspired to call in and tell me what you want to talk about, and let's have a conversation. I want to thank you all for speaking out and ask you to keep on talking. And until next time, talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.